You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Ian, look at this.
Well, it's a police box. What on earth is he doing here? Well, these things are usually on the street. I feel it. I think you do feel it.
Faint vibration.
It's alive.
Earth Station Who, a fun mashup celebrating nearly 50 years of the Doctor Who universe. Hold tight. You never know where the TARDIS is going next.
You're probably a bit confused right now.
I broke the glass. It's all come back to me.
This. What is this?
That's my ship.
What?
Let me take it from the top. Hello. I'm the Doctor. I'm a traveller in space and time.
And that thing buried down there is called a TARDIS.
Time and relative dimension in space. You're gonna love this.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Earth Station Who podcast. That's right, folks. We are here to talk about some amazing Doctor Who. It's 2020 already. Doctor Who has been with us since 2005. But we thought, wouldn't it be kind of cool to do last decade of Doctor Who? So this will include the whole Matt Smith era. This will include the whole Capaldi era. And this will also take care of Jodie Whittaker's era so far of Doctor Who up to present time. And we're doing this as a Facebook Live. So we're calling this our 12 favorite episodes of Doctor Who of the past decade. It should be a blast. And we got some great people here to talk about it. You know, I'm here in my TARDIS. And of course, as always, we have Mr. Mike Gordon with us.
Howdy.
And Mary Ogle is with us once again.
Hi, everybody. It is great to be here.
Yeah, I'm slowly seeing that I am fading away into the TARDIS.
You are terrifying.
I guess my past is, you know, catching up with me and somebody rewrote my history or something. So I'm fading away.
Rewrote a quarter of your history.
So we also want to say hi to Shirley Whatnot-Cott is joining us for the first time.
Hello.
Welcome to the show.
Pleasure.
It's really wonderful to finally have you up here. We were supposed to have you up here, I think, what, about a year ago or so. And I think schedules got messed up.
October a year ago.
Yeah. And so it's been a bit. But I met Shirley in this town up in upper New York State in the Hudson Valley, and a town called Beacon, New York. I was just wandering the street and I saw Doctor Who stuff on the front of the store, storefront. And it was just amazing. And I had to see what this was. And Shirley greeted me right at the door. And she was like, "Welcome to the Pandorica." And it was awesome. It was an amazing place. So tell us about the Pandorica.
Well, the Pandorica came about, obviously, due to my tremendous fandom for the show, but basically through having to change the environment. We were a restaurant previous to this that was outdated. So I felt I had to bring it into the present. And I guess we went a little bit further. We went into all time zones. And I created the Pandorica. And we've been inundated with Doctor Who fans from all over the world. It's been a fantastic experience. We serve all sorts of interesting items on the menu. We have, in homage, I guess, to a few of the characters, we have Madame Vastra Clever Boy, which is a po' boy, and it's made with alligator, because she is a reptile. We have Sally Sparrow Duck Salad, and that's Ledworth Duck, comes from Amy Pond's hometown.
Oh, awesome.
And
that is awesome.
Things like Satan's Pit of Pierogies, because they're nice and spicy. And of course, fish fingers and custard done both ways. Real fish for an appetizer, and fresh batter dipped French toast for a dessert. They look like fish, but it's really not. And they both come with custard. And the whole menu is chock full of things like that. So we love playing with the titles and names and
Oh, it is wonderful. Even everything in your restaurant is all Doctor Who themed, including the bathroom, which is just, it's awesome. It is really awesome. So how long has the Pandorica been in business in Beacon?
Well, our anniversary is coming up on the 7th of July. It'll be 6 years because we opened 7/7/14. We hope to be open by then. We're shooting for next weekend, for the 25th, 26th weekend, to open up in phase three here in New York. And we'll see how that goes. And we're going to do a celebration, anniversary celebration. The date has not been fixed yet. I'm still working on that. I just want to make sure that everything goes smoothly, that we make it comfortable for everybody and healthy and safe. So I didn't want to throw together an event, even though it'll be social distancing and reservation only. I didn't want to throw something together that I wasn't sure how I was going to pull off. So stay tuned for that excitement, because that'll be coming probably closer to the end of July. And we'll see how that goes.
That is wonderful. Sure. I've been wondering how you guys were going to be doing throughout the whole, you know, corona and, you know, being shut down. I know New York.
Well, I was open for curbside and takeout up until the end of May. So Memorial Day was our last day open for business. I wanted to close so I could redo the restaurant and bring it up to the codes.
Oh, sure.
So we haven't been since June 1st.
So, you know, I've seen, you know, pictures on your Facebook page about some Doctor Who celebrities have stopped by there. And, you know, and I know you go to a lot of the cons also. And so do you mind talking about that a lot?
Well, one of my favorites is because I love Long Island Who. It's Who-centric. You don't have to worry about all the other fandoms. Not that I don't have other fandoms. I do. But if I'm going to a Doctor Who convention, I want it to be all Who all the time. And they have a three-day event usually in, I guess, Veterans Day weekend, November, usually in November. Lots of fun. Go there every year. And they are basically classic Who. Mm-hmm. They go back to the old, the history. And their stars, their celebs that they get are a lot from classic Who and a few from, you know, modern day Who.
Sure, sure.
I've done New York Comic Con. It's too crowded for me. It just gets to be a little overwhelming.
Right.
We had our own Pandora Con this year scheduled.
Oh.
We had it scheduled for March 28th and 29th,
ooh,
and of course on March 15th, we got shut down. So we had Paul, we had John, no, that was someone else. I'm trying to think of all the celebrities that I've had here doing things. I'm trying to remember. Oh, Russ Mullen. We had, he was Game of Thrones and The Silence. We were having him there.
Nice.
I was having April 6th, I was doing a tea with Paul McGann, and that got canceled. Wow. So we'll have to reschedule that. And I just came back from a cruise, a Doctor Who cruise, which many people don't know even exists. And that was probably the best time I've ever had in my entire life.
Oh, wow.
It was 10 days with, there was 50 of us, 40 passengers and 10 celebrities. And you were with them 24/7 if you wanted to be. They were just there as people with you on the excursions, at dinner, on the deck, at the bar, at the shows. You were just hanging out with them all day long.
Wow.
And that was on a Royal Caribbean. Wow. So out of all of the amount of people, there was 50 of us that was just, it was like family. It was brilliant. It was absolutely marvelous.
Oh, that sounds,
that
it,
sounds great.
It really
amazing.
Does.
Amazing. Really, who was there? Michael Troughton. You had the Valiant there. That was Michael, Jason. You had, Frasier Hines, Sylvester McCoy,
oh, wow.
Simon Becker, Dorian Moldovar, Simon Fisher Becker. Mm-hmm. He was there. I mean, there were so many people there. It was absolutely wonderful.
Oh, that sounds like it was a great, great trip. I'm jealous, truthfully.
You know, too.
It's been going on for 20 years, and hopefully they will continue once, you know, if they're able to. So I suggest everybody come. The more people we have, the bigger celebrities can come.
That's true. But, you know, hey, Sylvester.
It's like and, any other convention.
You know, you get the Seventh Doctor, you have Jamie. You know, this is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. It's just wonderful with that. And it's just great. So we always ask when people join us for the first time, who is your doctor?
My original, I'm going to go into two of them because my original favorite, I started with William Hartnell, but he was never my favorite. My favorite was Patrick Troughton.
Okay.
Yay.
So I was thrilled to be on the
movie. We're Patrick Troughton fans.
Yes, we love Patrick.
You are a Troughton fan?
Yes, he's absolutely brilliant.
Absolutely brilliant. My modern era is Capaldi, hands down.
Really?
I'm a Capaldi fan, absolutely.
That's awesome.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I love Matt Smith, I love David Tennant, but hands down, Capaldi's my favorite.
I could understand that, and I loved how he got past Dr. Angry Eyebrows, so it's perfect.
Yeah, really. Oh. Yeah, now that my hair's all gray, I can play Capaldi.
I think a couple of us here can, so I don't know.
I think that is
pretty darn awesome, though. So how can people find the Pandorica?
The Pandorica, we have our Facebook page, which is the Pandorica Restaurant. We have our webpage, which is thepandoricarestaurant.com. We're on Twitter, the Pandorica Restaurant, and we're on Instagram, the Pandorica Restaurant. We try to be consistent.
Sure, of course. That's definitely.
So you can find us on many social media sites and Google, and it'll take you right to us.
That is awesome. Because, yeah, we definitely, you know, we found you by accident, you know, and it's.
As many do.
And it's funny because Beacon was one of the cities that up in upper New York, my uncle was suggesting that we look at to relocate to. And as soon as we found your restaurant, I told Judy, it's like, this is where we're moving. We are so moving to Beacon.
This is home.
Since you've come up, they have already built, I think it's like probably 10 apartment buildings, condos.
Wow.
Since then. We're on the short list of vacations, you know, from the city.
Right, of course.
Because we're only an hour and 15 minutes train ride up from Grand Central.
Right, because you're on the main line.
And because we're on the main line. Beacon is a main station. And so we've been, it's a phenomenal city to be in. It's half of Brooklyn is here, so it's not called Beacon.
Yeah.
So
we'll see lots of hipsters and everything.
But it's fun.
That is awesome.
A lot of hipsters. But we've always been a tourist town because of the river, because of Pete Seeger.
Right.
Because of the Dia Museum.
Right.
Which is the largest modern art museum in the world we have here. So we've always been the destination.
No, exactly.
And then Legoland is opening up across the river, so it'll be even better.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that. That's awesome. Yeah. So, you know, if you have little kids or adults who are like kids, you know, Legoland is perfect. So that is awesome. Yeah, Beacon is great. It's very artsy. It's very creative. And, you know, that's one of the things we loved about it. And we definitely will be back. So it'd be great. Yeah. And thank you for joining us for this wonderful.
Oh, my pleasure.
And everything. And
I thank you for the invite.
Oh, please. It's like anytime you want to come on the show, all you have to do is, hey, Mike, can I come on tonight? So it's awesome. So the way we're going to do this, folks, tonight is that we are going to be talking about our, you know, 12 favorite episodes of Doctor Who. We're not going to do 12 each because then that would be like a 3-hour show.
Nobody wants that.
It would be taking a lot. No, nobody wants that. So each one of us is going to do 3 episodes that we chose, and we're just going to do one at a time. So we're going to do round robin, and you know, folks at home who are writing in, Mike Gordon is actually keeping track of the people who are writing in and everything on Facebook Live.
I see you all.
He's watching you all. So, you know, basically we each have our list and, you know, he'll jump in between rounds and say, you know, what people are suggesting. And when you mentioned the episode that you're picking, why? I want to know why you guys are picking this episode. And like I said earlier, we're going from the beginning of the Matt Smith era, which was basically 2010, all the way through Jodie's season, which is 2020. And that includes specials, and that includes, you know, the shorts in, you know, that they did, you know, for the 50th anniversary. So this is wide open, folks. We can, you know, talk on everything, and you can have some honorable mentions at the end. Is that fair? Because I'm sure we're going to have some. And, you know, I think we'll have our guest actually go first. Shirley, you're
no,
you know, ladies no, ladies let, first.
Let, sense of illumination. Let everybody else go first, and whatever's left over that's my favorite, I will.
Okay,
I'll jump in.
I think that's fair. I know it's okay. Okay, so all right. I'm going to let ladies still go first. Mary, all right. What is your first pick out of over the last 10 years?
Well, I'm going to start out with one of my absolute favorites of all time, which is actually a two-parter, which is Time of Angels and Flesh and Stone.
Oh, yes, very good.
I love that two-parter. It's the river. It's River and the Doctor at their best, trying to outdo each other, bantering, just having a great time.
Oh, Dr. Sonic me. which was just
yeah,
awesome.
I mean, it's a fun two-parter, but it's also great to get the relationship established, especially after, that's the first one after the library. And it's great to see her relationship with Amy start developing, especially when you look back on it, because at the time you had no idea what was going on. But it's...
No, you had no idea who River Song was.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, even the callback with when he comes back to her and he doesn't have his jacket on, and it was such a big deal. Everybody was speculating about it.
I was like, wait a minute. Where's his jacket?
Yep. You have to trust exactly. me, Amy. Mm-hmm.
And the Amy and Doctor were very new at that time, you know, and which was really cool. And you know, and I love how Amy was trying to figure out the relationship between River and the Doctor. And she says, you two are married, aren't you? You know, you're husband and wife. And the Doctor's like, no. And Matt was, so, you know, and watching that when Matt is so young.
That's actually the first episodes they filmed, because they filmed those first in the block before the 11th hour.
Right.
And so, and already he embodies the Doctor.
Oh, God, yes.
Oh, yes. Completely.
No, that's a great one to open with. And I loved at the end of the first part when he had the flare gun and he said, everyone hold on. Everybody and their brother was like, the Doctor never shoots a gun. How could they? You know, and it was a
fantastic cliffhanger.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic cliffhanger, and it's one of those ones where it's like a fantastic moment, like it's, you know, that those Doctor moments that and those lines that will that just resonate with you forever. Like when he says, there's one thing you don't put in a trap, and it's like, what could he be thinking? Like me. And it's just a great line.
Oh God, yeah, there's a lot of great lines in that one. And you know, when Amy had the sand pouring out of her eye,
that was creepy. Or when the angel is coming out of the screen.
Oh my God, yeah. Any image of the angel is an angel. They set that right up right there.
Yeah, it could have been like, you know, I was nervous because this is the first time we saw them, the Weeping Angels, after Blink, mm-hmm. right? So this is like a follow-up, and you're like, well, were they a one-shot, or are they good enough to be a recurring bad guy? And yet, in this one, they're still really menacing. If not, they're even creepier, actually, than they are.
Yeah.
Oh, very much so. And you had something in this episode that was even more dangerous than an angel. You had the crack.
Yeah, yes. You had the crack.
And they all disappeared. It was awesome. And that was great because they were playing with time and how everyone who, you know, got close to the glow of the crack vanished from the timeline. And that's where they really started. Yeah.
I mean, that's terrifying if you think about it. You're not just vanishing, you're wiped from existence. You never existed.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that was just creepy as
the doctor always remembers. Yes.
Oh, of course. Of course the doctor does. So, and so, yeah, that I thought that was great. And then, you know, at the very end of the storyline, you know, with everything, Amy had so much built up inside of her and she, you know, came on to the doctor at the end of that and everything. It was just, and you know, and Matt Smith's reaction was perfect after what we had with Tennant before that, you know, the cute, handsome doctor who was a little too humid. This one was more, this doctor was more alien and such. So that was kind
of
cool.
He had one of the best lines in that episode, towards the end when the angel has gotten a hold of the, what did they call them? The father, the priest, what did they call the soldiers back then? They weren't soldiers. They were
religious.
Yeah,
they were religious figures. Yeah.
Whatever. When the angel had the captain by the neck, and the doctor says to him, "Oh, I would have loved to have known you better," and he turns around and says, "I think so. You know me at my best." I thought that was absolutely brilliant. Mm-hmm. Exactly. That was one of my favorite lines.
Yeah, he had to die because he was going to Game of Thrones, so it was perfect. You know. And but he was a great character. He was a great
character. Yeah, he was, because he wasn't. He was gray. I mean, he wasn't black and white. He was not. Oftentimes in Doctor Who, military figures can turn into just villains or just very one-sided, very one-note, and that's not how he was.
Right. Mm-mm, not at all. And that was one of the, that episode also had this in the second part, one of the scariest scenes in Doctor Who ever, when Amy had to walk through the forest by herself with her eyes closed. Amy, you've got to trust me, you know, listening to the doctor, and you see these, all these angels around her. And it was just like, you know, because the whole.
And you have to make them think that you can see.
Exactly. Exactly. Great first pick, Mary. Very good pick for that one.
Yes.
All right. Mr. Mike.
Well, I am going to sort of piggyback on that one since we're starting, since we're talking about Matt and we're talking about, like, we're going back to 10 years. I'm going to go back to the first episode that qualifies for this, which is The 11th Hour. I think this is one of the best introductions of a doctor and companion across the franchise. Just the story, the way that, and a showrunner too, because I think it's Moffat's first outing as a showrunner.
Yep.
And it's just a great, like, you know, he's playing with time. The, you know, he meets her as a little girl, comes back later. We're introduced to Rory. It's just fun. His doctor speech at the end, that he's, you know, the planet's protected. It's just a lot of fun, and it's a great first outing.
Oh, agreed. When he walks out of that hologram and goes, "Hello, I'm the doctor."
Like, yep, exactly. You absolutely
now run. Yes, and that every doctor has their doctor speech, and that's Matt's. And it's just awesome. Sometimes it's not in the first episode that they do, but that was Matt's doctor speech when he became the doctor for me. And that was just, it was just awesome.
That's right away. You know, I'm obviously, it also, you know, has a food recipe that inspired Shirley. So that's a plus as well.
What would her restaurant be without that? Come on.
If it wasn't for that duck pond, you know, there would be no network.
Exactly.
I love the quirky character moments in it, where the fish fingers and custard. I love the way he picks out his outfit. I mean, it's just, you right away, you know that he's the doctor, but he's also his own doctor, that he's got his own little traits.
Mm-hmm.
And you sense what his stories are going to be, and they're going to be fun.
Yes. Yeah.
And there's going to be comedy, and there's going to be lightness, which you didn't necessarily get with the past two doctors.
No.
They were always great, but they were either dark or they were sorrowful or heartbroken. But you knew that Matt Smith was going to be light and fun. Even with his serious moments, there was light and fun.
Oh, exactly.
And I think you can also tell, I mean, I think Matt's admitted many times that his main influence, doctor-wise, is Patrick Troughton. And you can tell that right from the first outing as well.
Oh, very much so. Because he always played a comedic, but then he turned it around just like Patrick Troughton did as the Doctor. And that's what was one of the wonderful things about this episode was you saw it right away, even from the bit when, you know, he was programming, grabbing the guy's computer in his bedroom and said, you've got to clear your browsing.
Clear that browser history.
You know, exactly. Or Amy as the kissogram, you know, and everything. And just, it was just awesome. And how spooky it was, you know, when you had, you know, Prisoner Zero and, you know, how you, she couldn't even see the room the whole time. And it, that thing was in there with her. It was just awesome.
It was a good creep factor. I mean, not one of the best villains, but still the creep factor was there. It sets up, you know, the arc of with the, you know, with the crack right away. You know, we get a lot of stuff in there, a lot of stuff to unpack, and yet it still, I think, holds up as an individual story. So
it's a great starter story for Doctor Who fans.
Oh, very much so.
One of the best, actually, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I like this one better than Tenet's first one.
Absolutely.
Because he slept the whole episode. Exactly. You know? Exactly. So yeah, I think it was a great introduction to the Doctor, and it was, and what was awesome about it also, truthfully, was this was a great hopping on point for somebody who has never seen the show before. Because everything was new. A new Doctor, new companion, new TARDIS.
New showrunner.
You know, new showrunner. And it was just go from there. And literally, it was wonderful for that. And, you know, you even had the tension already between with the Doctor and Rory. And, you know, right from the very beginning. And I love the scene when you see it from the Doctor's point of view. Everybody's looking up at the, you know, the eyeball in the sky, but except for Rory, who's taking a picture of one of his patients, you know, and everything. And you got to see that by the Doctor's point of view. You never saw that again in the Moffat era, but you just saw it that one time. And that was pretty cool and everything. All right. Shirley.
Okay. Well, let's stay with Matt Smith then. Okay. There's a couple of them. I could stay with, obviously, Angels in Manhattan, which puts an end to the story, or go with another beginning of Let's Kill Hitler, where we find out more history. And I love Let's Kill Hitler.
Let's go with that one.
It was funny. I mean, the if you think about the situation that they're in, World War II Berlin, you've got Hitler there, you've got, you know, it's not a funny situation.
No.
But they brought humor to it. To a time that was devastating. And you brought history to it with River. And you found out that all along that she named her daughter after her daughter, after Mel's. Mm-hmm. It was an incredible, you know, V8 moment. You know?
Exactly. What? She's been here the whole time?
She's been here the whole time because she always regretted that she never, well, in the future, again, well, I think this came right after Impossible Astronaut.
Yeah.
Or after Demon's Run. I'm not sure.
This one came, you know, this was actually after Demon's
Run. It came after Demon's Run.
This is when it came back because they used to do split the seasons in two at that
point. Right. So this was, so she already knew it was her mom, and she had said that she regretted, or she already knew she was River's mom, not seeing her daughter grow up. But in reality, she did because it was Mel's. It was her best friend.
No, very true.
They grew up together. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, so that's one of the reasons I enjoyed it, because you saw the growth of River.
And you got to see Rory punch Hitler, which
Rory
was awesome.
Rory put Hitler in the cupboard.
You got to see him put him in the closet.
Exactly.
And you got to see the when the penny dropped and Amy realized that Rory was in love with her throughout their whole childhood.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know, so there was a lot of very, very sweet moments in a horrifying situation.
Oh, very much so. And you got introduced to, what did they call that? Like spaceship that was the robot. You remember?
Oh, that's a Teletron.
Yes, the Tesselector.
Yeah.
Which would seem very...
Which was very important later.
Yeah, I was going to say, it seems like a kind of cool one-off thing, but it makes a big difference later on.
Absolutely.
We've already seen one. We didn't realize we'd already seen one.
And it's interesting.
I suppose one should say, by the way, this show is filled with spoilers.
Oh, they know. Yeah. And because we've actually reviewed this episode on our podcast about a year or two ago. And so, you know, we're spoiling the hell out of whatever we talk about tonight. So if you haven't seen it, folks, it's been on for like 5 years, 6 years now. So yeah, you had time. So, but, it was a great, great episode. River was just on fire.
Oh, Alex Kingston. Really? Wow.
Yeah.
Love her.
And she was set to kill the Doctor. You know, this was her mission. And, you know, her realizing how good of a man the Doctor was and that what he would sacrifice for his friends. And
it was never going to be a gun for you, my dear.
It was always going to be a gas.
Exactly. And it was, it's like, what is this thing with spoilers? You know, I loved it. It was just great. I could definitely understand why you definitely picked that one for your first round. That's good. I like it. My first one. Darn, I have a couple of different ones, but I'm going to go with the Doctor's wife. And, you know, that is truthfully one of my favorites of the new series. Written by Neil Gaiman, his first shot out writing Doctor Who, and it was a love letter to Doctor Who, and it was just great. From the very first scene where they introduce, you know, Idris, and you know, is this going to hurt? Oh yes, it's going to hurt. Yeah, you know, and it was just great. You know, every line from that, you know, was just beautiful. You know, oh, you know, there's, you know, it's just like kissing. It's just like fighting, but there's always a winner. You know, something like that. And it was just awesome. And you know, you had, you know, a little bit of Gallifreyan lore introduced with the cubes, with the personalities, and you know, Big Brother, and you also had aunt and uncle. It was just really, really, it was scary as heck, you know. And this is just another episode where they had to kill Rory once again.
Yes, poor Rory.
You know, so but those scenes, you know, you got to see some of the interior of the TARDIS, and it was, you had the round things at least, you know, so, which was always nice. And it was just a lot of fun with it. And you also got to see the old control room, and, you know, that's when they were saying about, they had talked about the desktops before in the Peter Davison crossover with David Tennant, why there's all these different control rooms and how they look and stuff. But they were going, you know, you got to see the ninth and 10th Doctor's control room again. And it was just awesome.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, I loved it when, you know, and you had Michael Sheen as the
voice of the
and which was, it was just awesome. It is a great story. That one is one I can watch over and over again and not be tired of seeing.
Yeah, it's another story where it's the relationship that's the forefront. It's the relationship between the Doctor and the TARDIS. And humanizing the TARDIS in that way is just such a stroke of genius.
That's a brilliant, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And of course, she had common sense things to say. Rory didn't understand, but of course, it was her words that introduced you to River in a way, because the only water in the forest is the river.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Which of course meant absolutely nothing. What's this kind of gibberish going on?
Exactly. Because it's true, because you still, at this point, you didn't know who River was.
You didn't know who River
was. And you also, you know, because... It was, and actually, that wasn't even the real Amy at that point.
It was the copy Amy.
That was already the copy Amy.
Exactly.
And so that made it even the doppelganger. And so it was like there was just all these different things going on in the story, and it was just so wonderful. It was really wonderful. And I loved, you know, when she said, you know, you didn't steal me. I stole you.
Yes.
And it was like, it was my choice. And the same, and then the same line, you know, when he said, you never took me where I needed to go. I said, no, but I took you where you needed to be. And it was just, those lines were just, it was, I know I didn't get it right, but you know,
yeah, that's okay.
You know, but you know, you know, we're not good at memorization here.
You never took me where I wanted to go.
Yeah.
Right. I guess I'm a little bit more one up on the exact lines of things because we watch it here at the Pandorica. Ah, so we have it on, you know, if we were here 24/7, it would be on 24/7. So from the moment that we come in to the moment we shut the door, we're playing Doctor Who.
Which is wonderful.
And so we've cycled. Oh, it's wonderful. We cycled through them so many times. I've seen the episodes 50 to 100 times. So when you come up with, anybody comes up with an episode, I'm like, okay, you know, I've got that one.
I know
in my
that
head.
One.
I'll just
right.
play it again.
Got it there.
I know that one. Yeah.
No, and that totally makes sense. And that's what's great about Doctor Who is it's so memorable. And you know, oh, this is this episode. I know this just from one scene. You know, oh, this is what happens here.
But you always find something, not always, I mean, not as many times as I've seen it, but if you see it 3, 4, 5 times, you'll find something new in it every time.
God, yeah.
Sure, 50 times you may not. Oh, you may. You know, but your parents need to find something
that.
New in most of them if you see them over and over again. Mm-hmm. When I saw Vincent and the Doctor, and I'd seen it 100 times, because it's one of the favorites that people ask for, it took me forever to realize that Amy's vase of sunflowers was actually sitting on the table next to the fireplace. I'd never noticed that before. And then one day I was like, oh my God, there's the vase of sunflowers that he painted.
That is awesome.
You just see things, you know?
Mm-hmm. It's wonderful when you could do that with Doctor Who. So that was my pick. We finished the first round, folks.
Really? We finished the first round. We do have some, I don't know if you've been paying attention, we do have some comments. We've got Alan, of course, from, you know, the recent virtual Hulanta that he sponsored, which was a great fun. Alan says, all right, y'all, enough Matt Smith. Time to pick a Capaldi episode.
Oh, yeah, we're going there.
Don't worry, Alan. I've got one lined up.
Don't worry, Alan. We got it.
And Mark Heffernan is still on Matt Smith. He said, for Matt Smith, I really enjoyed Asylum of the Daleks and A Town Called Mercy.
Oh, cool.
And Sharon Reed said, Vincent and the Doctor was a good episode with Matt Smith. So,
oh, very cool.
More Matt Smith picks. And yeah, so.
Well, Asylum of the Daleks was awesome because they totally surprised us and introduced us to Jenna Coleman.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Soufflé Girl. Yeah. And it's like, wait a minute, that's the new companion. What did she do? You
know? They kept it a secret.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean.
Oh, they did great with that and everything. And I think we were at Dragon Con when that, you know, aired, and so everyone was like, oh, did you see what happened? I haven't seen it yet. I haven't seen it. And so it was pretty awesome. And you know, The Town Called Mercy was great because I'm convinced the Doctor already knew what happened to Rory and Amy.
It did seem
like
he did.
Yeah and like he was going back to, you know, do further adventures where he could with them because they were already gone because of the angel story. So those are great picks. Great picks.
Yeah. And we've talked about Vincent and the Doctor and our love for that episode ad nauseum almost.
Oh, that actually was the other one I was going to do. I had choice right there. So it was either Doctor's Wife or Vincent and the Doctor. So awesome. Let's go on to the second round if you guys are ready. Mikey, you got to go first this time.
Well, I am going to go. I'm going to go. Oh man, you know what? I'm going to go Capaldi just to please Alan. And since we're, since we've been, there's more Matt Smith goodness, that I have on my list, but, I am going to, pick for me, which was the highlight of the Capaldi era, which is Heaven Sent.
Oh God. Yeah. One. It's on my list.
Heaven Sent, you know, never before had we seen a story or an episode that featured just the Doctor, like by himself. We'd seen episodes with just the Doctor, but he always interacted with somebody, you know. And here it's just Peter Capaldi, And the whole episode is on his shoulders. And it's just an amazing, amazing episode. It's well written. It's intense. And Capaldi shows why he got the job. he's absolutely amazing in it. And it's really fun. I like that one a lot. And I believe, that one was directed by Rachel Talalay, which is one of my favorite directors as well. Mm-hmm. So it's just all around great, you know. I mean, the follow-up, you know, Hellbent and, you know, the middle of that stuff with Clara and everything is kind of, I don't want to say it brings it down, but there's a lot of baggage there. So you can't, it's hard to watch Heaven Sent just by itself without, you know, with those pieces there. But it's still an amazing achievement for Doctor Who.
Oh, it was a beautiful episode. It really was. And the talking and how he's figuring everything out and, you know, just seeing like when he, with the water and all the skulls that are down there in the lake just shows, you know, after you see the episode, of course, how long he's been there. 'Cause those are his skulls all down there. And it's just amazing.
Well, it's interesting because go ahead. Really?
Why did he use the shovel to help break the wall?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of his fist. I mean, his fist is a little more delicate than a shovel that he had in his hand. I don't know. It's just, I always wondered why he didn't just take that with him.
Mm-hmm. The doctor never takes the easy way out.
Yeah. Well, that's actually, I was going to say something like that because that was the kind of episode where he could have, there was different ways he could have played that, different emotions he could have used. And a lot of people might have, thought, well, I should use desperation because I'm just trying to escape mm-hmm. from this loop I'm in. But he never does. It's just like stubbornness, sheer stubbornness. It's like, I am not going to give up. I am just going to keep doing this.
And that's what's wonderful. And that's what made it great was just him constantly going through. Because when you first see it, you think it's his first time going through. And it's just like over and over. And each time it's almost more painful to watch and everything. And it is, and it's great. Because it's to the doctor, it's his first time. But to us, it's just like, again?
Yeah,
and damn the Time Lords for putting him in there, you know?
I think it also says something, too, about, I mean, looking at it, if you took it on a level of, you know, because he just lost Clara, and there's this sort of the very stages of grief that he goes through as well, that he's working through as he's trying to figure out what's going on and get out of there, I think is something that you can look at and take to heart, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, exactly.
The longest shiver I've ever seen.
Well, you know, he didn't have any mirrors open, so it's okay.
This is true.
They were all covered, so it's okay.
Yep.
But yeah, it was a great story. And, you know, I think somebody told me, you know, the doctor was in there for thousands of years
mm-hmm.
and everything. And does that count as his psych, how old he is? Or does it, you know, because it's each time it's a new one. So, or does it just count as once, you know?
But wasn't it like 7 billion?
Yeah, it was something incredibly like, long.
It's huge.
I mean, unimaginable number.
Yeah. It was some number was just like off the charts.
Yeah, off the charts completely.
Exactly. But yeah.
But it would take that long for a fist to go through mm-hmm. a mountain of diamond.
Oh, do you think? Definitely. Yeah.
But I think he used his fit because he kind of...
I guess.
Because he kind of wanted to hurt himself at that point. He's like, I need
that's
to feel.
Exactly right.
Probably.
I need
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
He was out of frustration, you know, and pain and everything, and that's why he punched it. And, you know, and that's when whatever the thing in the cloak was.
And they said that Capaldi didn't have any feeling. You know, that he was just crotchety and old and lacked feeling. But his love for Clara was so evident. And not in love, like Tennant.
No, it was not that kind of relationship.
Pure familial love, mm-hmm. you know, a daughter, a niece, a friend. I mean, it was just beautiful to watch. I loved Clara in the Capaldi era more than I did in any other.
Okay.
I felt she had her purpose with Matt Smith. She, I always thought she felt herself a little too on peer with Matt's, you know, with the doctor, which of course, how could she be? But then she was the impossible girl.
Right.
So she did save the doctor's life. So she had some reason to feel the way she did. But I thought it was a little cheeky.
Mm-hmm.
I really did. And I just felt that the role with Capaldi was a much sweeter role.
Okay. You know? See, I have to disagree a little bit, and I'm sorry to say it, but you know, with, I always felt like, I think she became a worse person when she was with Capaldi because she wanted to become the smartest person in the room. And she wanted to become the doctor, basically. And you saw that in a couple of the different episodes that she was in. And that's what eventually cost her life when, you know, she thought the doctor was going to be able to save her after she took the mark of the crow or whatever they called it. And, you know, and but her trying to be the smartest person backfired. And that's what happened. And then I thought it was a cop out that when they sent her off across the universe with me.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. You could look at it that way, or you could look at it at she really looked up to the doctor. He was a father figure to her, and she wanted to emulate him, and she wanted to be like him, mm-hmm. rather than be the doctor instead of him. She wanted to just make him proud, type of, I guess it's just, you know, how you relate to things.
Oh, sure. Of course. No, and that's totally awesome. I could totally see where you're coming from. And, you know, that she idled the doctor enough that she wanted to be just like him. Kind of similar to what they were trying to do with, I think we once said, with the Seventh Doctor and Ace, a little bit, in some ways.
Right.
Where he was grooming her to become a Time Lord and everything. So it's very interesting to see. All right. Very good choice. Very, very good choice. All right. Mary.
All right. I'm also going, to take us to the end of the Capaldi era. And the two-parter, excellent. World Enough and Time, The Doctor Falls.
Had that on my list as well.
How can that not be on your list? It's just, the Cybermen are scary again. It's, yes,
really scary.
I mean,
yeah.
Maybe scarier than they've ever been.
I mean, the whole Bill getting turned into a Cyberman is the most horrifying thing I think I've ever seen.
Well, right at the very beginning of that episode, she gets shot right through the chest.
Yes.
It's like, what?
I mean, yeah, they're playing it hardcore there. And it's just the time it takes for him to get to Bill. And you know that she's not safe where she is. And it's and the reveal of the master.
Oh, that was awesome.
Oh, brilliant.
That was awesome. And not Missy,
right.
But the John Sims master.
Yeah, the redemption of the John Sim master, I think.
Yes. Oh, very much so.
And the arrogance of the doctor comes up again.
Oh, very much
of
so.
Of him having to tell the whole story of him being the doctor and how he's going to save everyone. And while he's talking,
right,
Bill gets shot.
Yep.
Yeah. It's like, you know, just don't be, he got ahead of himself. Ahead of himself.
Oh, very much
and
so.
That was unfortunate. And that it happens to him because he's that old. And Matt Smith did it and David Tennant did. I mean,
they all do it.
Did it in their own way. Yeah. So this was the point where Capaldi had done it.
Oh, yeah.
And that was, yeah, I think Tennant did it in Waters of Mars. Matt Smith, I forget, he had an episode also. I think Stolen Planets, I think he had his moment of, you know, that was Matt Smith. That was still Tennant.
Right.
I'm sure there was a Matt Smith episode.
I'm sure there was. Yeah. I'm definitely
but
sure.
Yeah, it was like, come on, Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 30 seconds less talking, we wouldn't have this happening.
Oh, and it was a perfect wrap-up to the season, too. You know, because the doctor throughout the whole season was trying to redeem Missy.
Yes.
And, you know.
And it's a satisfying, you know, ending. I mean, even though Missy dies end, it's you have a feeling that he may have succeeded.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
No, very much so. And, you know, and it it was really awesome. You know, the conversations between Missy and the Master were just awesome. They played off each other well. And it was neat because you were able to see the Cybermen evolve through this episode because of the different time, you know, changing through. And that was brilliant how they did that with, you know, that closer to the black hole, it moved slower.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And, you know, at the top, it was faster. And it was just great. And Nardo had his moments in this. And I think we all said it, that we ate our hats because we were so scared that Matt Lucas was going to be horrible.
And he was not at all. He was really good.
No, he was brilliant.
And he really shows it in this episode. I mean, mm-hmm. there's such great performances in this episode. It's a real showcase for Bill, too.
Oh, God, yes. Yeah, Pearl is awesome.
She really was.
She,
yep.
And
I liked her throughout all. I thought she was a brilliant companion, and I was really, really sorry to see her run end, although we knew from the beginning she was only doing one season, mm-hmm. but it was nobody knew how she was going to go out.
Right.
But it was just very sad that, you know, she was a great companion.
Yeah, she really was. Very She's one of my favorites.
Well, yeah. And it was interesting because, you know, knowing that she was just one and done, that, you know, it was going to be, all right, what are they going to do with it? And they took what happened to Soufflé Girl to the next level by making, you know, Pearl. Yeah,
that's right.
Exactly. Pretty much. For fries. Yeah. Chips.
Chip girl. Yeah. Chips.
Bill's chips.
Chip to girl.
We have them on the, we now have a Bill chips corner on the menu.
Awesome. That is great. But yeah, and that's what's awesome about it was, you know, you had that, and to see, you know, to her, she sees herself as still human, but then you saw her on the outside and she was Cyberman. And it was so well done. And, you know, no, I'm me, I'm still here. And, you know, it's all electronic. That's why everyone's fearing her. And, you know, and it was just great.
Scary.
I think Moffat was a brilliant, brilliant showrunner and writer. I think he brought things to Doctor Who that I don't know. I mean, there were a lot of Moffat haters out there, and I thought the complexity that he brought to it was just wonderful. On the two levels that you watched the show, you could watch it as a one-off type of thing and not realize there was this sub story going on that was being pulled throughout the whole series. I just thought he was brilliant at that. And, you know, he always had an underlying message. And I would think, going back to what you said, that Bill had her own self-image that she saw that other people didn't, mm-hmm. you know? So I just say he was brilliant.
I absolutely agree. I call myself a Moffat fangirl. I thought he was a brilliant writer. I think he started to get tired near the end and he slipped a little bit, but overall
fandom was turning against him.
Yeah.
Remember?
And I think that was very unfair.
Mm-hmm. No, agreed.
Of course it was. Well, they're not anymore though. A lot of them, a lot of them have changed their mind.
Because they saw Chibnall. Yeah. Well, yeah. But also,
which I had high hopes for.
Oh, yeah.
But because of his, he knew Jodie from Broadchurch and, mm-hmm. you know, he knew Doctor Who from writing a few episodes. So you would think that his second season, way better than the first season.
Undoubtedly, yeah. I have a couple of those. Yeah. Well, we'll talk about that in a few.
But Moffat to come in and do a first season where you know who the Doctor is right away, you know who the companions are right away, and he's not really worked with them before on the level that Chibnall did with Jodie Whittaker, I expected that kind of relationship, that he would have her fleshed out mm-hmm. and have her character done, because he knows her and he knows what she's capable of. She's a brilliant actress. She's a great comedian. She can play the roles if it's written for her.
Right.
But the fact that it wasn't was extremely disappointing.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. It's the Jodie was never the problem. It's the writing that failed her.
Never.
Very much so. We've always said that each episode we've reviewed, and you know, it's not Jodie. It's definitely the writing and the production. All right, Shirley, you want to do your second pick? Still there.
we'll stay with Capaldi. But there's a couple of those. I'm so torn because I love Bill. So the pilot was a great episode. Mm-hmm. And I loved Missy. And so therefore the Magician's Apprentice and the Witch's Familiar was a great episode.
Yes, it was.
But then I have to go with Zygon.
Oh, yes.
On my list too, damn it.
Brilliant. And I think what makes it even more brilliant is it was written probably a year or more before it aired.
Really?
Because it had to be written first, and then it had be acted out. And it was probably written about a year before it aired, and yet it aired in such a significant time because of all the terrorist activity that was mm-hmm. going on at the time. Mm-hmm. So here you had the whole French in Paris, that whole terrorist stuff that where they killed everybody. What was it, in the train station?
Yes.
And that was the week afterwards, you get this Zygon invasion thing. And you get the whole being outed by the Zygons outing their own people to make them look like everyone's a terrorist. And it was just like so relevant. It really, really stuck with me. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the war speech. I mean, I think to me, that was Capaldi's speech, was the war speech.
No, I can see that.
Every doctor's got one.
Yep. No, I agree completely.
And it's so true. Everybody's got to sit down and talk at the end. It's where we're going.
Oh, it was really well done. And I loved to, you know, say what you will about Jenna. She played a great Zygon.
Oh, yeah. She was really good in this.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
She was awesome. And, you know, it was great because it was a unit story. It was great because you never knew who were the Zygons and who wasn't. And it was great.
Yeah.
And the doctor or the president of the Earth, you know, it was just awesome.
And you had the major in there again, and you had everybody mm-hmm. in there.
You had, you know, a lot of great, you know, you had,
yeah,
and you know, that was good, you know, and the whole thing with Oswin and, you know, coming back, and it was great, you know, because so many people.
And we got two of them out of here.
Exactly, because, you know, because so many people didn't, you know, were so upset that, you know, Missy killed, you know.
Right.
But you didn't know which one she killed. So, and that always was like, and to this day, Ingrid Oliver still gets, you know, so which one are you?
You know, it's a good episode when the secondary characters just light up the screen, like Osgood, Kate Stewart.
Yeah.
I mean, they were mm-hmm. so good in this. I could go back and watch this again and again.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, Osgood being just like a Doctor Who fan.
Yes, wearing the scarf. I mean,
you know, it's like she's us. So that's why we all related so well. I mean, she's a Doctor Who fan. Like the, I forget the name of the character in, was it Under the Lake? The one who was like, it's the Doctor. It's the Doctor. We get to go and travel with the, you know. It was
that was a great story also.
That was a great story. That's what I'm saying. Capaldi had so many good stories. Mm-hmm.
No, agreed completely. And that two-parter, I think, that's one of my highlights for the Capaldi era. Just writing-wise and mm-hmm. direction. And, you know, like the end of the first episode, the Clara Zygon blows up the airplane.
Yes,
it's just like...
It's awesome.
And then does a complete James Bond get out of it at the end, in the beginning of the next episode. Yeah. It's just great.
I love that season because that's when they were doing like two-parters throughout most of the season. And I just love the flow of it. I thought they were all pretty much well developed, but that it peaks with those two in particular.
Oh, very much so. And, you know, that's a go-to, you know, like, what do I want to watch today? The Zygon story. Okay. All right. Not going to argue there. It's just awesome. Nope. All right. My next one, I'm going to actually rewind a little bit and go two seasons before. And we blew right past the Day of the Doctor.
No, that's
the 50th anniversary.
Yeah. That's almost a given. I almost feel like, that's one that we all agree on.
Nobody else said it.
No. Well, actually JD posted it in the comments. Yes. From the airlock. Okay.
Did we give Wi-Fi to the airlock again?
We've got some other comments in there too, but, and I'll get to those in a minute, but,
that was just great because you had Tennant come back as the 10th Doctor. You had, you know, both, you know, you had him interacting with Matt, and they played off each other so well. And then you had, of course, the War Doctor.
John Hurt
was just awesome. It's like, what is it with these screwdrivers? It's not a weapon, you know. he was almost like the younger one of the three of them. And right. You know, but he was like lecturing, you know.
And I was worried that Billy Piper was coming back. I thought, this could be a disaster, but it wasn't at all. I mean,
it could have been a disaster because it was originally supposed to be like the 9, 10, yeah. 11, right? Together. Right. And since obviously, you know, ties were broken at that point with, Chris, you know, it could have been a nightmare to rewrite and everything like that. But boy, Stephen really stepped up and knocked it out of the park.
And that was what was great about the end of the season before that, when they were in the Doctor's timeline or whatever. And, you know, and they had ended with introducing, you know, John Hurt as the doctor. It was just like,
and you know, happening.
Everyone had heard that the Zygons were the bad guys by this point, and they were all going, "Oh, he can't be the Doctor. It has to be a Zygon pretending to be the Doctor, kind of like, you know, the next Doctor or something like that." Yeah, but no,
he was the Doctor.
It was awesome because they tackled the end of the, you know, Time War with both fists and everything. And because we had heard over the seasons before that all about the Time War. But, you know, this you got to experience, and, you know, Gallifrey falls no more, you know, and the whole thing with the painting and everything. And it was a great 50th anniversary.
And the surprise of having Tom Baker. Oh, yes. I mean, really.
Tom Baker. Oh, yeah.
Still gives me chills.
Yes.
Yeah.
So amazing.
Yeah.
Four Doctors.
and it was awesome seeing that. And I just, with having Tom as the caretaker was awesome. And it was just like.
And the relationship with him and Matt was so cute.
Oh, who knows?
Exactly. Don't call me. Maybe I'm you.
Exactly. And it was just awesome. And it made everyone guess. And I remember because Alan was hosting an event through Hulanta/Timegate at the hotel for the anniversary. And so everyone had watched it earlier, and then they were re-showing it. And everyone was still oohing and aahing when we were watching it in the with everybody else. And it was awesome because we were in an auditorium, basically, and watching it. And, you know, when Tom showed up, it was just like, oh, you know, everyone was like that. And everyone cheered when, you know, what, 12 doctors? No, 13. And he saw the eyebrows.
Yes.
It was so awesome. And there were so many great parts in that, you know, anything from as simple when they're walking through the museum and they pass a fez and Matt goes to pick it up and Clara goes, "Can't you just walk past one of those once?" Nope.
Just the TARDIS hanging from a helicopter and Matt hanging from it.
Oh, God.
Just so many wonderful moments.
Oh, that was just awesome.
And going into the basement and calling the guy right at the top saying, "I know you just think you saw me, but blah, 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 blah. This is the Doctor."
Yeah.
You know, the whole thing, it's like it brought back the timey-wimey stuff all over again.
Oh, God, yes, and everything. And it was just so, and what they, the events they did, from the Paul McGann short.
Yeah.
They did right before that, you know, "Did somebody call a doctor? I know I'm not the one you were expecting." And it was, and I, because nobody knew that he was coming back. And it was just awesome. And, you know, I was getting ready for work and I was watching it on my phone. Oh, something for the 50th anniversary. And all of a sudden I cheered at the top of my lungs when I saw him again. And it, like Judy was like, are you okay? What's wrong? And I was like, oh, man. And it was just awesome. And then when they did the special with the other doctors, you know, tying into that. Oh,
God, that was so good too.
The five-ish doctors.
It really was.
It was so much fun. So much fun.
Mm-hmm. It was great. I'm so thrilled. And Moffat pulled it off, which was great. And everything. So it was cool. All right. So we got the Day of the Doctor. What do we got from our list, our people on Facebook?
On that note, like I said, JD had mentioned the 50th anniversary special made me so happy. It was a total glorious nerd fest. Mark Hevenin chimed in with Five-ish Doctors reboot was awesome as well.
Cool.
We've got Sharon Reed said, I really enjoyed Husbands of River Song and the Zygon Invasion for Peter Capaldi.
It's on my list.
Mark Heffernan said for Capaldi, Thin Ice and Twice Upon a Time. Oh, cool. I do like Thin Ice a lot. That's a really fun one.
Mm-hmm.
And Rob Levy joined us. He threw a little bit of shade on the Dr. Falls episode. So he says the build plotline would have been better if we didn't see it with Danny Pink first. So there's Rob there, but
we didn't get Cyber Brigadier.
Yeah, don't see, like, why did you even bring that up? We're talking about our favorite stuff, man. Okay. You had to bring it down. But we've had a lot of people join us. The award-winning Bobby Nash has been here. The mayor of Chicken Town has been spying on us. Rebecca McCoy, Raven, right? She's here. Hey,
hey, awesome.
Hey, howdy.
Hey, hi.
So yeah, we got a lot of familiar faces here, and we could, feel free to comment, folks. Because
definitely would love to hear from you guys.
We got one more round to go, so if you don't, if we don't name your favorites, feel free to chime in. We go into this final round.
We have 8 done so far, so we got 4 more left, and we got a lot of Doctor Who still to cover. So, Shirley, you get to go first this time.
All right, I'm going to go with. Speaking of Danny Pink. I'm going to go with Listen.
Listen. Awesome. Yes.
Great episode. You got to see the Doctor's fears in this and how they developed, how his fear of the dark and his fear of under the bed and how that all started. Was that Clara grabbing his leg what started him with that fear, and wanting to know what's outside at the end of the universe with the four knocks? Was that his fear? I thought it was a brilliant episode. And who is this Pink of the future if Danny's dead?
Mm-hmm.
How could he be a descendant of Danny
Pink? Who is Orson Pink? Yes.
Exactly. Who is Orson Pink? Exactly.
That was an interesting episode.
It was.
Because it was still fairly early into Capaldi's era. And I feel like he was still trying to find himself as the Doctor. And, because he was still the whole thing, am I a good man? Am I a bad man? Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. But it was interesting because it explored a lot of his psyche, but it also explored Danny's psyche, what's behind him. And Clara was the one going between all of those. It was really interesting.
And fear being, which what the Doctor is, fear being a superpower.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So the Doctor used his fear of things to try to help people. Mm-hmm.
And I love the scene because the Doctor was sitting on top of the TARDIS.
Yes.
That was totally cool. It was like his Zen moment.
Yeah, I love the idea that, there's two ways you can go with fear. You can either lash out, or you can use it to understand another person's point of view. You can use it to create empathy. And the Doctor, always at least tries to take the empathy path first.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I enjoyed about it, because fear can can halt you in your steps. It can make you, you can take it inward and just do nothing with your life because you're so fearful, or you can embrace it and use it as an energy and use it as a superpower to keep going. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was a great message all in all, you know, especially because I think at that point there were a lot of younger viewers, you know, since it was coming off the Matt Smith era, basically, that, I really liked it. And I liked the interaction of Clara and Danny and the doctor. It was fun again, you know. This was that was when the relationship was still young and everything. So it was good.
Wide-eyed and innocent, goofy kids.
Wide-eyed and innocent. Like, how did you know my name was, Rupert? Mm-hmm. Oh, you told me. No. Oh, you said it. Well, maybe I saw it on a letter or something. You know, it proved Clara to be a very good wife.
Oh, very much. Very, very much so. So yeah. Awesome. All right, Mary, you're next.
All right. I am, I had a couple from Jodie's era, well, three from Jodie's era. I was going back and forth. But I think I'm going to choose Rosa.
Awesome.
Because it was, well, I will admit, there is a flaw with the villain, but it doesn't matter because they rightly focus, take this focus off of that and really put the focus on Rosa and her journey and how important she was and what needed to happen and how, mm-hmm. I mean, and the doctor wasn't there to blow anybody up she just needed to make sure that Rosa did this one specific thing, or at least it wasn't even her. It was Rosa. She just needed to be there to kind of just make sure this happened.
And I love how she had to make sure the companions didn't get up, that there, you know, there wasn't space for her.
But it wasn't her taking over.
Well, that was Graham.
It was her.
It was Graham. Yeah.
And Graham, who actually was so hurt by the fact that
he had to be the one.
Because she would, because she wouldn't allow him to sit. It was his fault that she got dragged off and all that. You know, this was right after losing Grace. So it was difficult for him.
Well, but it featured Graham, which was awesome. You know.
And for once, they didn't shy away from the violence of the era. I mean, Ryan experiences racism, you know, almost as soon as,
firsthand.
And they don't, you know, it's not, a lot of times in Doctor Who, they'll just, you know, everyone will just kind of forget what it was really like in those eras. But not this time. I mean, this time they let you know right from the start, this is what it was like, and unfortunately what it's still like in a lot of ways.
Yeah. I thought the inclusion of that one, the bad guy for the story, I thought that could have gone completely without him.
Well, the only reason he was, I think, it came off wrong. He was there basically to make the story because he wanted to stop Rosa Parks from getting, you know, from sitting in that seat.
Right, because he was a racist from the future.
He was a racist. But that's what I'm saying. You really didn't need an alien for this. You could have used any other person in, even a human that went back in time that somehow got a hold of it. You didn't need an alien. There were so many racists among in the time back then.
Oh, very much so.
To bring in a racist alien is like, what are you thinking? Mm-hmm. This is absurd. How would an alien even become a racist? You know, I mean, was he a human from the future? We don't even know what he was.
He was completely unnecessary because that already existed at the time. There was just, like you said, no reason for him to be there.
Yeah, he was redundant.
Oh, exactly. I think that was the worst part of that episode, but it is a wonderful episode.
And again, with absolutely. A lot of great performances.
Oh, yes, very much so. I agree completely with that. Awesome. Great pick. Mr. Mike.
Well, since I started by going at the start of the 10 years of the decade, I figured I'd finish my last pick with the last of the decade, And my favorite episode from the last season is Nikola Tesla's Night of Terror.
Yeah, that one was on my list too.
The idea of the Doctor meeting Tesla in particular, but throw in Edison and then that whole time period, is just something that I'm surprised took so long to happen. And it doesn't disappoint. This is a fun story. It's full of really cool Easter eggs for those people who know that time period. You know, it's got the Scythra in it, which, again, sometimes in these historical ones, as we just mentioned, the villain sometimes is the weakest part. But that's not the fun of it, right? The fun of it is, you know, the Doctor interacting with history, actual history, and seeing how that's depicted. And I think in this case, it works really, really well.
Yeah, I so remember the scorpion monsters from the history books. It was awesome.
The ones that were related to the arachnids.
Exactly.
Because they look almost identical.
Oh, yes. God, yes. The makeup, they just like, all right, we're running out of budget. What kind of makeup?
We still have the arachnids lying around.
Well, on the cruise, there was this gentleman, Mark Goodman, from Millennial Effects. Mm-hmm. And Mark, I think. And he was saying, and he had done some of the new monsters of New Who, of Whitaker's era. Mm-hmm. But he also had done the monster in the caretaker, the one on the wheels with the...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the one that looked like on a handicap thing. Yeah. Wheelchair. It was, he said that you can't use what you've used before.
Really?
Because they are, they belong to different, you can't use in the new series under different showrunners what is licensed.
Oh, that's interesting.
In the older shows. So this is why you're always coming up with new monsters. This is why you have Tim Shaw. This is why you have the one that looks like the Rachnos, whatever they're called, the scorpion ones. And all these other new monsters are coming out. And why you had that strange Dalek at the end and not the regular ones. Because I guess it's a licensing thing.
Really?
And a copy.
Interesting.
That you can't use.
That's very interesting. Now, that's interesting that, you know, that is, but it's a great, great story. And actually for me, that was the first story that Yaz started picking up. They started really focusing on her character because I think she was the breakthrough for this last season.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, they toned Graham down and Ryan, we don't even know what, you know, the deal is with Ryan, you know.
Well, they're gone now, aren't they?
They're going to be gone as the holiday special.
Ryan and Graham, yeah.
But
which is sad.
But you know, but Yaz, this was the first one where she went off with Tesla, and you know, she experienced all this, and they were focusing on her, and they had given her plenty of chances to do that in the first season, but it just didn't catch. Even the stories that focused on her didn't catch.
Exactly.
Because that almost went on my list because it was a great, great story.
I love that episode.
And, you know, that was another one that didn't really have to have aliens in it and the same things would have happened. But, you know, that's neither here nor there with what we're talking about because with Yaz, I think they finally decided, let's start picking this character. They had to, you know, do it because I think they got a lot of complaints that they were focusing on the White Gentleman, the first season, you know, and with Graham, who we all love on the show.
Oh, hail Graham.
Exactly. You know, episode 2.
A sandwich named after him.
Jody in the chat room says the same thing. All hail Graham.
All hail Graham. Yes. That is awesome. But yeah, so I definitely think this one, it was brilliant. I loved the looks on, especially Ryan and Yaz's face when they were realizing everything that Tesla had invented. And, you know, and it's in the history books, but it's always behind Edison. And, you know, and it's just, it's a shame that, you know, was like that.
So. And the casting of both of those figures was on point too. I mean, Doctor Who frequently gets it right with casting, and they just nailed it there too. So,
oh yeah,
it's a very fun episode, and like I said, it's my favorite of the last season, one of my favorites so far of Jodie's run. And there were, like Mary, I only had three of those on my list. I only had three of Jodie's on my list of I think I picked like 15 or so, and. Mm-hmm. And I knew we wouldn't agree on the third one.
Uh-huh. Well, we do have honorable mentions coming in a few minutes, so we'll see. But my last pick is also a Jodie era episode, and I'm going to do Fugitives of the Jadoon.
Yes, that would have been fun.
This one episode, I don't know how they kept the story quiet. The whole thing with, you know, oh, Captain Jack's coming back. You know, everyone was like, oh, Jack's back. Oh, that's great. You know, and, you know, because
smoke and mirrors.
Exactly.
Look over here.
Look at this here. And then to bring out the whole other doctor. And it was just like, what the hell was going on? When Jodie saw the TARDIS buried. Yeah. And it was just like, what the heck? I don't remember them leaving the TARDIS there. What's going on? And then her coming out and it's like, it was my watershed moment for the whole season. When she came, let's take it from the beginning. I'm the doctor. I am a traveler through time and space. And it was just like, and then you're trying to figure out the whole time. What? You know, I've got to watch this again. I got to figure this out, you know, type thing. You know, where is she from? Who is she? Where does she fit in the timeline? Is she the next doctor or something? And I definitely don't think we're done with this story by far. I don't know. And I think, you know, please, Chris, don't screw this up.
Yeah.
Please. You know, because this is, it is awesome. And it really, that was the shining moment of the season for me, and it just, and for Chris Chibnall to hide that and, you know, not say, and he was just saying, oh, this episode is going to change Doctor Who lore forever. And I said, what, Captain Jack's back? That's not going to change, you know. And it was great. It really got me
excited again about Doctor Who, because after Jodie's first season, though I loved Jodie, I was just really kind of disappointed in how things turned out. But Fugitives of the Jadoon, just, I'm like, oh, yes, we're back. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. It's like, oh, finally, we're good. We got it. And I was just amazed. And, you know, that, you know, from the Jadoon coming back and the doctor, you know, it kind of like threw me. It's like, all right, she has the same DNA as the other doctor. Why wouldn't they, you know, be able to scan her and say, oh, this is the one we're looking for, the fugitive. But, and then you'd be asking, why is she the fugitive? You know, that type of thing. It's like, I know how they had to play it out type thing, but it was just interesting to see. And I'm excited by it. And would I like to see her as the next doctor? Yes. I would love to see her as the next doctor. I think it would be
Dr. Ruth.
Dr. Ruth would be awesome.
Of course, the British are not as familiar with Dr. Ruth as the Americans.
Oh, sure. I know.
I don't think they did. So I don't think Chibnall would have named her Dr. Ruth had he.
No.
Really explored what that meant.
But let me tell you, little boys. Let me tell you what we got to do. So, no, it's like, you know, when they said doctor, when people started calling her Dr. Ruth, I just had to be like a 13-year-old again and go, snicker, 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 you know. But, yeah. So, those are our lists, folks. That is our 12 best of the last decade. Anyone have any honorable mentions that were not mentioned?
I have one. It's a Matt Smith episode, and it is The Crimson Horror.
That was one of mine.
I love that episode so much.
Diana Rigg.
Well, that one felt like it was a closet, you know, like basically like a closet for a spinoff, you know, like a pilot for the Pat and Nostra Gang.
Yeah.
Type thing.
Yeah. That
would have been nice.
Yeah. And no, it was awesome. All, you know, Vastra and Jenny and Strax were awesome.
And Ada is such a wonderful character.
Oh, God, yes. It was so well done. And, you know, you had Mrs. James Bond.
Diana Rigg's daughter.
Yeah, exactly.
Played her daughter. Right. It was awesome.
It was a great, great episode. So, yep, that's a good one. That was on my list. That was one of them. Anybody else?
I thought, sorry.
No, go ahead.
The first two episodes of Jodie's second season, Spyfall, I thought were really, really good. We had shown it. We show premieres and finales here at the restaurant on a big screen.
Nice.
And the reaction was amazing when you're with other people to, you know, to enjoy it. Maybe that made it more special for me. But even though I'd seen it with other people, I still went on the weekend to see it in the movie theaters, the two-parter. And on the big screen, I don't know if anybody else saw it on the big screen. It was absolutely amazing. It was made for the big screen. Mm-hmm.
It felt like a movie.
In the movies, yeah.
It did.
They did that one in the movies. Like they do every year now. They're doing something in the movies.
And I love it when I loved it when they said, "Oh, and this was the master plan."
Yes.
Right. Oh.
I was like, "Wait a minute!"
Another big surprise.
That was a good surprise.
Another big surprise.
Exactly. That was awesome. Yeah. All right. Any others?
The two I have on my list that we haven't mentioned so far are The Husbands of River Song.
That was my other one.
Because I'm always a sucker for a great river story, and her and Peter just are, you know, amazing.
Oh. And I loved the whole time he had to play dumb about the TARDIS and everything.
Yeah,
that's so good.
Oh my God.
And then
when she opened it up for the cocktail, he didn't even know that.
Yeah. Oh,
and the last moment of them together is just the sweetest. Uh-huh. It's just the sweetest moment. And it brings you right back to her introduction with David.
Very much so.
Like, it's just sort of like, you know, makes it all like just sort of like if there's no more river stories officially, that they film, I'll be disappointed, but at least they kind of wrapped it
up. That was a really good way to end it.
You know, they should have ended it with the River Song theme.
No, they should not have.
And the other one that I picked, my third choice from the Jodie era was Witchfinders.
Oh, okay.
Really?
I know that you guys weren't as high on that one as I was, but I just thought it was a lot of fun. The Doctor in the era of the witch trials and all that was just a blast. And Alan Cumming, to me, like, makes that story even better because he's just great fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's also the first episode where they actually used the fact that the woman was a doctor, that the doctor was a woman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
to
true.
Show yes. the fact that she was powerless. Because I always felt people were like, oh, they made the doctor a woman, blah, blah, blah. Well, this was the problem with the show, I felt, is that the doctor's the doctor. No matter what body you put the doctor in, the doctor is the doctor. Mm-hmm. How you perceive the doctor mm-hmm. is on you. Mm-hmm. So you're the person that's changing, not the doctor themselves. They're always the same person. So whether the doctor is young or whether the doctor is old, you're looking at them completely differently. The fans didn't give Capaldi a break because he wasn't young Matt Smith anymore.
Nope, exactly.
And now, again, not giving Jodie Whittaker a break because she's not a man. She's not a male. So I thought they could play on that more in the show itself, that it's not the doctor who's changed. She doesn't have to make her own sonic to prove that she's the doctor, you know. So now she's got to do all these things to prove that being a woman is as good as being a man.
Nope, agreed completely.
Agreed.
Totally.
That's
so true. Instead of changing the doctor to prove who she or he is, you've got to try from the doctor's perspective to change the people viewing the doctor, because it's with them that the fault lies, not with the doctor.
Right.
So I wanted to see more stories in that. And they pointed just in that one time when she was on the log, chained to the log, and she couldn't get loose, to where she, and where she was yelling at the crowd, saying, "I'm not used to not being listened to."
Yeah.
And the reason she's not listened to is because she's a woman. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Nope.
So that was the only time I saw that in the beginning, that they used that. And I really wanted to see more of it.
I wish they would, truthfully.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that was another aspect that I enjoyed too. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay, awesome. All right, I have two on my list real quick, and then we'll find out what everybody else on Facebook had to say. My other ones was Mummy on the Orient Express.
Yes, I had that
That's
one.
A fun one. That's a fun one.
Which is a real fun one, and I wish that conductor would have stayed with the doctor. Yeah. Yep. That was really awesome, and it was just a great thing. And that one just showed how inhuman the doctor was. He was letting people die left and right in that one to figure out what the mummy was and everything. That was just awesome. And the other one I have is The Impossible Astronaut.
That one too.
Okay.
So good. You know,
Mark Shepard as Canton
the
third was awesome. And you know, with the
all the twists and turns.
Oh, with the doctor getting shot right at the very beginning by the astronaut. Yep.
And the silence.
The silence, Richard Nixon, you know.
The so doctor has a beard.
Yeah.
Will I be remembered? How will they remember me?
Exactly. I love the scene when they're in the soda shop and, you know, the doctor had just been killed and, you know, and they saw that there was another invitation sitting there and the doctor comes out of the bathroom
just
and
River's
like, this is cold. This is cold even for you. It was just awesome. And now there's just, it's just great.
Great setup to a great
and Churchill,
mystery.
I think, was in that one too. Right? Mm-hmm. Churchill was in that one. Didn't he come back?
No, it was. Was it? Yeah, was it?
No, Churchill. It was Nixon. There. Churchill came back at the season finale.
The wedding of River Song.
The
wedding
of
River Song.
Right.
I'm confused with the doctor.
Because the doctor had the beard in that one, because he was the soothsayer or whatever in that one.
Right.
And so, yeah. But it was just awesome in that, because that's where you got introduced to the silence and poor Amy, you know. Oh, and the scenes in the asylum, you know, and seeing all the silence hanging down. Yeah. Oh, and that poor guy who was running the asylum had been, his memory had been wiped so many times.
Yeah.
It was like a Renfield picture. And the little girl in the astronaut suit. Mm-hmm. It was just like, what the heck is going on? No, it was awesome. So those are our picks. What do we got?
Well, we've got a few more as we're ready to wrap this up. A few more from the last decade, our favorite episodes. Let's see. Jodi Perrell said Hell Bent for her. She gives a vote for that one. Felicity says she loves Listen as well. And then Mark Heffernan said the historical episodes are the highlight of the Jodi era so far, with the haunting of Villa Diodati being
That was really fun.
I agree with the first half of that. I love the first half. Not sure about the second half.
But, when they introduce the Cyberman or the partial Cyberman.
Yeah, when it becomes a prelude to the next Cyberman's episode children, is when when it starts to fall apart for me. But and then Alan lists every other episode we did. He has a list here. Girl Who Waited, which is an amazing episode. That almost made my list. God Complex, Cold War, Hyde, Flatline, Last Christmas, Under the Lake, Before the Flood, Smile, Thin Ice, Extremis, The Sarangas Conundrum, Kerblam, and The Haunting.
Sorry, Alan, I'm not going of Kerblam Villa with Diodati. You.
No, we talked about that when he was on the episode.
I think we did. Yeah. And then his last one is another vote for The Haunting of Villa Diodati. So
I think I also would have added Amy's Choice now that I think about it. That's a good one.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I forgot about that one. That was the one with the Dream Lord, wasn't it?
No, yeah. That's the one where Amy, you have two different Amys. You have old Amy.
Oh, Amy's Choice was that one?
Well, old Amy is, I thought that was... I'm thinking of Girl Who Waited.
The Girl Who Waited.
Oh, no, you're right. You're right. I'm sorry to get the titles mixed up.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Amy's Choice was when they were in the dream.
That's a really good one, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
With all the birds.
Yeah, that was awesome. And they didn't do anything with the Dream Lord because you thought there was going to be something, he's going to become like the new Valyard. Yeah. I know I said the V word, folks, you know. But
he's off having tea with a celestial toy maker and the meddling monk.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But that was a great episode, too. And, you know, we had some great stuff over the last 10 years. And so hopefully we'll get a season or two in the next 10 years. So it should be cool.
You should be a shorter list if you did the worst episode.
Oh, we could have fun with that. Maybe that might be our next Facebook Live.
The 12 worst episodes.
So it's a Doctor Who.
Alan is holding firm. He said, Kerblam is the best in all caps.
Okay. Well, we definitely would love to hear from folks at home also. please, folks at home and also Facebook Live, if you want to do more, let us know if we missed any others and what your favorite. We'd love to see the list. We'll talk about it. But definitely would love to hear from you guys. Please write us at earthstationwho@esonetwork.com. We definitely would love to hear from you guys. You know, there's tons of great, you know, stuff out there. Thank you, everybody, who has been writing to us. We actually did get a piece of email that we'll talk about real quick. If we keep on going and talking, we have so much people who have written us. And this gentleman who did write us, his name's Bill Lemond. He is written a couple of the other shows. He actually is one of our patrons. And so thank you very much. For those who don't know, ESO Network does have a Patreon. And all you have to do is go to patreon.com/ESO Network. And this show will go up 48 hours before it goes out to the general public. Earth Station 1 goes out to the patrons before, and so does the Dragon Con report. But we also have a brand new podcast called the ESO Board Silly, which is just the board members of the ESO Network just sitting around talking. And we did recently a summer drink program, and that just went out live. We also, you know, have special episodes and bloopers and certain things put out by different podcasts of the network. And, you know, just it's all exclusive just to our patrons. And so, and I'm willing to announce right now that coming very soon to patrons at a certain level, you can get magnets that say, "I survived the geek seat." That's right, folks. So yes, if you want to become a patron, all you have to do for as little as 25 cents a week, that's not too shabby these days. You know, that's less than a cup of coffee. You can actually, even at your restaurant, right? That's less than a cup of coffee there.
Less than a cup of coffee.
Okay, good. I just wanted to make sure that it's less than a cup of coffee, and you could help support the ESO Network. And thank you, everyone. You know, it's pretty darn awesome that you guys have and everything who've been supporting. So Bill wrote us, "Dear Whovians, I had to try half a dozen times to hear the Secret of Navis Ham in your greatest show in the galaxy episode. It's my attention deficit, but I suspect many, if not most of your listeners are trying to do something relatively mindless with their hands while they listen to you. I missed it while I was looking through email at least 3 or 4 times. I missed it while cooking an omelet for my roommate. I finally heard it while cleaning the cat's litter box. Kind of ironic that he heard it then. And I said, would it be possible for each of you to have access to an on-screen button you could click as you talk to trigger about a quarter note's worth of tones, including subject is about to change or subject title about to drop? I would love that. I'm actually on the short bus for a variety of reasons, all from the neck up, including non-hyper, daydreaming, attention deficit. I need all the help I can get, so please help me. We'll try to do that, you know. If, and he said, I have a friend visiting who says he can stay just long enough to watch The Secret of Novice Hom. And I love listening now to you guys discuss Greatest Show. It's one of our favorites, and Sophie Aldridge and Sylvester McCoy are among my favorite people, not just in Doctor Who. They are great
they
people,
really folks. Are.
We've met both of them. They are pretty amazing. However, I didn't think it works. And someday, with the ruling, this is how he worded it. It's a different paragraph, so that's how he. That's why I didn't go into it. However, I don't think it works, and someday, with the ruling, what you love part of my webcomic series, I'll show you Bellboy diverted the stone aliens by introducing them to then current level of home video games. I can see the two older aliens happily complaining and that the kid always beats them. They'd be too busy to having fun caring about the message with anyone else. Well, they probably want to organize a tournament of some kind with the video game. I love the story, even though my life experiences make me sad for what happens to the circus staff and Mags. Okay. I'm actually reading Sophie Aldridge's book in hardcover, At Childhood's End. I finished chapter 2 last night. They spent almost enough of proofreading. I found a couple of very tiny mistakes that don't interfere with understanding the narrative. The atmosphere from the beginning of chapter 1 is wonderful, and me really care, though I guess that's maybe easier. The book description says 2020 Dorothy Ace is going to interface with Jodie Whittaker's doctor and her three companions. I would look forward to that.
Yeah, God, that we would all be awesome. Would.
That mm-hmm. would be awesome. Sophie Aldridge had a couple of ghostwriters the whole with bit, but I give her credit for knowing her character. And I need to get more info on the other stuff. Happy to support you through the ESO Network on Patreon. Bill.
Thank you, Bill. That was very sweet.
That was awesome. That's great. Bill, you know, I hate to say this, Bill has been working his way up through the membership in our Patreon. And, you know, he started as a dollar listener and then he's moved his way up to some of the higher levels. So thank you for your support. We appreciate it. And I know he's also written Kevin over at the Flopcast, and I know he's written a couple of the other shows too. So he pretty much said to us that he almost listens to every show. I think the only one he doesn't listen to is Cigar Nerds or something because he doesn't support smoking, he said. So Understandable. But, you know, everyone, thank you whoever listens to our shows, and we appreciate it. It's been great doing this Facebook Live thing. It was a lot of fun. Shirley, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Yes, it was wonderful having you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're a ton of fun.
Good luck with your restaurant endeavors. It sounds like a marvelous place. I need to be there.
Yes, we need to take a field trip there.
That's the point. I hope you can all.
Yeah.
We need to take our TARDIS there.
We have a, because of social distancing, I have a corner that is now blocked off, and we have marked it as the TARDIS parking space. So. You're welcome to park your TARDIS right there.
That is awesome. That would be great. Do you want to promote the restaurant one more time?
Okay. So we are the Pandorica Restaurant. We're in Beacon, New York at 165 Main Street. We are going to be doing reservations only because of social distancing when we open probably the end of next week. Our phone number is 845-831-6287. And we would just love you to join us there. So we're going to be thrilled to be back open again.
Folks, this is the total Doctor Who experience. You got to check it out. It was a wonderful time. And Shirley was so generous with her time when showing us around and everything. And, you know, I was in heaven. I can't, you know, state enough. And
heaven sent.
Heaven sent, which is awesome. And of course, let's thank our regulars, Mr. Mike.
As always, it's my pleasure.
And Mary, always great to have
you. Thank you for having me. It was wonderful to talk about all these great episodes.
It was actually a lot of fun. And thank you to the folks who stuck with us tonight on Facebook Live. Really appreciate it.
Yes, thank you everybody. So much.
And you'll be able to see this, you know, it'll be in archives on Facebook, I'm assuming, because Facebook keeps everything. So it'll be a lot of fun. On behalf of myself, Mike Faber, thank you so much for being here. And we will see you guys next time on Earth Station Who. And I think we're going to be looking at the Peter Davison episode next time, Enlightenment.
So,
exactly. Should be kind of cool because we're going to be seeing ships in space. So it should be a lot of fun. Until then, peace and take care of yourselves and be safe. Peace.
You have been listening to Earth Station Who, a bi-weekly pop culture podcast dedicated to all things Doctor Who, featuring talents from across the universe. All topics on the show are the sole opinions of the individual and are used for entertainment value alone. You can subscribe to our podcast up on iTunes, Stitcher, or follow our blog at www.esopodcast.com. You can also follow us up on Facebook, Twitter, or Google+. If you enjoyed the show, please leave feedback up on iTunes.
Hey everyone, this is Carrie the Metal Geek, and I would like to invite you to hang out with myself and my fellow Metal Geeks as we have all kinds of discussions about heavy metal, films and TV shows, video games, theme parks, comic books, and whatever else is tickling our geeks. Please visit our website at MetalGeeksPodcast.com and follow us on all the social medias including Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Metal Geeks. We are also proud members of ESO Network, so you can check everything out at ESOnetwork.com. Keep it metal, keep it geeky, stay safe, and see you on the next episode.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.